Chapter 15. Black Sails.
Think on this, my friend. The realms, as we know them, are but the echo of an echo, iterations extending outwards into an infinity of possibility from a single source.
Angstone leaned forward, gesticulating for emphasis.
Is not that source, the wellspring, if you will, the truth of the thing?
It had been 3 days since Gardas had entered the realm gate. 3 days with no sign of any of them. 3 days of trying to bury his worry beneath arguments about truth, beauty, and the nature of all things. There were worse ways to spend time.
More true, you mean, than the air we breathe, or the sun that warms our faces?
Yare asked, frowning thoughtfully. The Stormcast and the old man sat together on the broken skull of the Leviathan, sheltering in the shade of a tattered lean-to.
Anselm of Talbion had it that to conceive of a thing lends it a certain weight of truth. In that sense, the world around us is as true as your wellspring, an equal truth, in fact.
Angstone shook his head.
You cannot lend equal weight to an echo, Yare. Ah, but who is to say what is an echo and what is the voice from which it emanates?
Yare smiled widely and clapped his hands.
Indeed, it is even as Dulles of Rhyran said. And now he twists the words of the sage of Rhyran to make his point.
Angstone said to one of the nearby judicators who stood on guard around the skull.
Have you ever heard such blatant sophistry?
He makes a good point, though,
the judicator mused. He scratched his chin.
Sarth of Thyria maintained that reality was a communal effort.
I'm surrounded by sophists, Angstone bawled despairingly. Harsh words, Yare protested. My reasoning is built on the bedrock of Dulles and Anselm, the Verdant School itself. You call that sophistry?
Fine, casuistry.
Angstone amended, waving a hand in surrender. Before Yare could reply, a shout brought him to his feet. He saw a liberator hurrying towards him, mortals scattered before him like frightened birds. Despite his best efforts, there were still too many people in the fortress. Too many refused to leave Yare, and Yare refused to leave until the last of the innocents were safely gone. Angstone leapt off the skull and crashed down with a rattle of sigmarite.
Balogun! What is it?
The Night Heralder requests your presence, my lord. There are things coming out of the realm gate.
Balogun sounded uncertain.
Demons?
Balogun began to nod, but his head snapped back as a flickering balefire arrow sprouted from the eye slit of his war mask.
Angstone spun and saw a group of rotbringers charging across the courtyard.
He barked an order. The judicators loosed a volley, dropping most of them, including the archers.
This wasn't the first such attack the remaining Rotbringers had made. The citadel was too large, with too many nooks and crannies to be searched effectively. Those Rotbringers who hadn't fled periodically launched suicidal raids, attempting to retake parts of the fortress.
We should have flattened this place when we had the chance,
Angstone snarled, planting his standard.
Yare! Calm your people. We can't protect them if they're running about.
The old man began to shout, hands raised. His voice carried easily. Then he had been an orator before he'd been caught. The courtyard trembled, water spurting up through the cracks. Angstone gave a brief thought to Karunta, fighting down in the dark. He would need reinforcements.
But then he thought of nothing save defending himself, as a roaring Blight King stumped towards him, rusty blade raised over his lumpen head.
Angstone shattered the sword, and then its owner's skull. The Blight King flopped to the ground. Spears sought Angstone's life. The Order armsmen were fanatical and determined to follow their masters into death. Angstone obliged them. Soon his hammer was wet with blood and brain matter. The remaining Rotbringers fled, scattering across the courtyard. Judicators brought down those they could. Before he could order his warriors to hunt them down, he heard a cry from above. A prosecutor swooped low.
"Black sails, my lord," she called out. "Looks like they've regained their courage."
Angston cursed. Many of the Rotbringers had fled in galleys and barges when the citadels had fallen. It looked as if someone had finally taken command of the rabble.
"Do what you can to sink a few, and send word to the retinues in the other citadels. I want them back here now, at the double."
"More trouble, my friend," Yare called down.
The old man was pale but unbent.
"It is time for you to leave, Yare," Angston said.
He looked around at the other mortals.
"All of you."
"We will fight," a mortal said.
The man was missing an eye and a hand, and covered in stained bandages. He held a length of iron pulled from one of the cages. Others took up the call. Angston looked around, chagrined.
"If you fight, you will die," he said bluntly. "All men die," Yare said.
Two of his followers helped him to the ground.
"Not all men die for a great purpose. Would you deny us that, my friend?"
"I would rather you not die at all," Angston said.
"Take it up with the gods," Yare said. "We will defend this place and our peoples for so long as the gods will."
He smiled.
"Besides, we have not yet finished our discussion. Truth must be pursued at every opportunity."
Angston stared at him. Then he laughed.
"Yes, I suppose it must."
He looked around. His forces were sparse, but they would serve well enough. What his judicators lacked in numbers, they more than made up for in accuracy. He turned to one.
"Volkers, make your way to the walls. I will join you in time."
He signaled a nearby liberator.
"Advika, gather your retinue. Reinforce Kurunta. Pass along my apologies, but I must stay here."
She slammed the flat of her warblade against her shield.
"As you command, Knight Vexilor," she said.
He watched her lead her warriors away and turned back to Yare.
"I'm going to the walls. Will you see to things here?"
The old man nodded.
"To the best of my humble ability," he cocked his head.
"Do not die, friend Angston. That would be a poor way to end our conversation."
"I will do my best."
Angston uprooted his standard. As he set off, he couldn't help but wonder at the timing of it all. Demons coming through the realm gate, and now this attack. It felt as if the jaws of a trap were closing about them all, and there was nothing they could do about it, save endure. He shook his head.
"Wherever you are, goddess, I hope this was worth it."
Gardas and Talon stormed across the boarding plank, heedless of the green flames which rose to either side of them. His hammer snapped out, pulping a demonic visage. His runeblade followed suit, its tip carving a bloody gouge across a bulbous eye. He kicked the blinded demon from his path, and Talon pounced upon it, beak tearing at its flesh. The Griffhound hadn't left Gardas' side since they'd found him, and the Lord Celestant was grateful for the animal's presence. Gardas dropped onto the deck of the galley. The vessel, like the others floating on the plague-slick waters, was aflame. Demons and corrupted warriors raced to intercept him as he moved towards the rowers' benches.
"Enyo!"
Gardas roared, without stopping. A rain of arrows descended from on high, punching through armor, flesh, and bone. Bodies fell to the deck, twitching in their death throes. Enyo swooped low around the mast, loosing an arrow as she sped towards the stern. A plague-bearer tipped over the rail, clawing at the shaft in its skull. Gardas's runeblade chopped through a coil of chain. The souls at the oars watched him as blankly as all the others had, unable to even conceive of freedom. He looked about him, frustration growing. Behind him, something laughed. He turned to see a distended mountain of a beast squatting behind a rawhide drum atop the aft deck. The creature smiled widely, split lips curling away from greyish teeth. It might have been a man once, but now it was shapeless with decay and covered in mossy scales.
"They are lost to you, Silver One, lost even to the light that seeps out of your husk.
Its voice was like boiling mud, and it had stretched reptilian features.
All that reside here belong to the Lord of all things, body and soul, even a humble musician such as myself.
The creature rose on barrel legs and hefted a filth-encrusted flail.
Even you, though you do not yet know it.
We are the faithful, and our faith protects us.
The creature threw back its head and laughed uproariously.
For now,
it looked around.
We were told of your coming and sought to claim the bounty on your souls. But we were too overeager. Every plague dog out for himself. Others will not be so foolish.
It waggled a fat finger at him.
The harder you struggle, the deeper you sink, eh?
Unless you have wings.
The creature stiffened, an almost comical expression of dismay passing across its reptilian features. It looked down at the tip of the blade jutting between its sagging pectorals. Then it toppled forward, crushing its drums beneath its limp frame. Cadoc held up his starblade, studying the black bile coating it.
Why do they talk so much?
He stepped over the twitching hulk.
It is as if they think we are so foolish as to listen to their lies.
Gardas straightened.
It told me one thing of use. This attack was not simply by chance.
He looked out over the harbor, scanning the wrecks that littered the waters. Most of the galleys had been destroyed at a distance, scythed clean of crew by arrows and lightning, or the hammers of the prosecutors. Those that had managed to draw close had been boarded by his warriors and made to regret their eagerness to get to grips.
Nothing is by chance, Steel Soul. We are the Blade of Sigmar, thrust into the very heart of the Dark Gods.
Cadoc sounded ecstatic. He looked around and laughed.
Even here, the thunder of Sigmar will be heard. We shall make the realms tremble with the strength of our faith. I fear this realm trembles with the anger of its creator, rather than any display of ours.
Gardas turned and saw Morbus making his way towards him, leaning on his staff.
The Lord Relictor's armor crawled with thin strands of lightning, and his eyes shone with a faint radiance. From the way he moved, Gardas could tell he was in pain.
Morbus, are you hurt?
We lost four, Morbus said. Four more souls.
He pressed his hand to his chest.
I have them all, but I do not know for how much longer.
He looked at Gardas.
Our brethren are heavy, Gardas, and they are burning me up from the inside out.
Gardas closed his eyes. This was his fault. He had plunged headlong into this place, attempting to save a warrior who was already lost. And now his chamber would suffer because of it. He took a shaky breath, trying to push the sudden surge of guilt back down. Now was not the time. Later, perhaps, if he survived. But not now.
Look upon ruin and remember these words, Cadoc said, as if reciting an old lesson learned long ago.
Gardas glanced at him and saw that the knight Azeroth was watching the enslaved souls hunched on their benches.
Though you cut a man's spirit, he must bleed all the same.
His hand inched towards his beacon.
Let me end their suffering, Steel Soul. Let me set their bodies alight so that their souls might rise like smoke.
Morbus caught his wrist.
And where would those souls rise to, Cadoc?
The Lord Relictor hissed.
If you think they suffer now, imagine what torments await them upon dissolution. Soul stuff is the mulch of these gardens. Killing them will only serve to feed newborn horrors.
Cadoc jerked his wrist from Morbus's grasp.
Then what would you have us do, Stormforged? Ignore this blasphemy? No. Endure it.
Morbus pointed.
There is nothing we can do. Not here.
Grim's soul fire grows dim, and there might well be oceans of filth between us by the time you finish sacrificing these lost souls for your own grandeur.
Cadoc spluttered, his eyes blazing with anger. Gardas extended his arm, separating the two.
Peace, Prince of Ekran. Set aside your anger, and you will see that he is right.
Cadoc growled wordlessly, but subsided. Gardas looked at the rowers. Some were clambering over the rail to slip soundlessly into the water. Others simply sat, staring at nothing.
Is there anything we can do for them? Morbus turned away. They were drawn here. Their souls glow rotten with despair and the ailments that spring from it. Envy, hatred, and all that comes with them. And any attempt to help them will only draw Nurgle's attention to us all the more swiftly. Already, I can feel the weight of his stirring.
He trailed off, head bent. Gardas cast a wary glance to the sky, but saw nothing save the roiling black clouds of smoke. He stroked Talon's bloody skull, and the Griffhound gave a shrill, rumbling purr.
Let us get back to the galley before this wreck sinks.
When the Stormcast had returned to their vessel, Gardas was met by Tegris.
Steel Soul, one ship escaped, the Prosecutor Prime said. I did not see it in the smoke.
Tegris seemed hesitant, uncertain. Gardas waved his excuses aside.
It was not your fault. Without your quick thinking, our foes might have overwhelmed us.
He looked at Morbus.
Could this fleeing galley be the one that holds Grimm?
Morbus nodded wearily.
It stands to reason. I can feel his essence growing faint, as if he is moving away from us, and at all speed.
He pointed to his reliquary staff.
There, that way, towards the heart of this realm.
That was the direction the galley was fleeing in, Tegris said.
Gardas frowned and extended his hammer towards Taunus and Gatrog. The Rotbringer had remained chained to the mast for the duration of the battle, and the Knight Venator had stood sentinel over him, dealing death from afar.
What is in that direction? More aqueducts?
Yes, Gatrog said. They are crude things and overgrown. It will be slow going, and even slower when you reach the tier below.
Where is the galley going? Is there some fortress or sanctuary there?
There is no shelter in the third level. It's a wilderness,
Gatrog said, glaring.
They will likely be heading for the walled city of Despondency on the fourth tier. Most captives taken in the first tier are bound for the soul markets there.
Is there any way to get ahead of them?
Not unless you can fly, Gatrog said.
He smiled.
But I can show you the quickest route. It will be dangerous, though. Few ships survive that journey. Most take the slow current around the edges of the jungle until they reach the outer rim of the great vent, the stone tunnel that coils around and down to the very gates of the city. But there are other ways.
We cannot trust him, Cadoc said. He will send us to our deaths.
Gatrog snorted.
Aye, and so I will. But I do not lie. Upon my honor, I do not lie.
He shoved himself to his feet.
I swore an oath, and I will fulfill it. They will be waiting for you at the great vent, and in greater numbers than here. Only by bypassing the obvious route do you stand any chance of reaching your goal.
What is this route?
The Pox Knight smiled, his expression eerie in the light cast by the flames.
A way even demons fear to tread. Strike their backs to the bone, Durg!
Spume roared as another galley erupted in flame behind them.
Get us moving! We need to get out of here!
He braced himself against the mast,
glaring out at the destruction. The shiny skins had torn through the other galleys like the Red Plague, shattering the shaggy ships and leaving them burning. In a way, it was impressive. Even Cornates couldn't have done it so quickly. Derg uncoiled its whip and gave it a snap.
"Work, you dogs! Row, or you'll be food for the poxworms!"
The plaguebearer stamped up and down amidships, cursing and snarling in his flat monotone. Spume nodded in satisfaction as the oars began to creak in time to the thudding of the drums. Speed was their ally today. The black galley smashed aside a shattered wreck, spilling its remaining crew into the soupy water. Demons clawed at the hull, trying to clamber aboard. Spume's crew pried them off with boat hooks or lashed their claws with thorny whips. He had no room for the weak aboard his ship. A pall of smoke rolled across the water, momentarily obscuring the battle. Spume refused to relax. The shiny skins could fly faster than his galley could move. He underestimated them before and paid the price, and now he'd done it again. Angry, he slammed his fist against the mast. He looked at his hand, at the splinters and the oozing blood, and felt a sense of calm settle over him. Suddenly, he understood what the Fly Dandy's message had meant. He'd assumed the Stormcasts would be driven back, or else contained in the swampy outer ring. But it seemed that wasn't what Grandfather wanted. A bark of laughter slipped from him. He was to be the bait, drawing them deeper into the garden and to the walls of desolation itself. It was a simple enough plan, he supposed. Draw the shiny skins in and close off any route of escape. Tighten the noose, slowly but surely, until they finally realized that they were on the scaffold. Their despair would be all the sweeter when that realization hit.
"And what will be my reward for bringing that about, I wonder?"
The Court of Ruination was a snake pit, second only to the bureaucracy of the Impossible Fortress. Many was the loyal warrior who had been ground to mulch by their machinations. Spume didn't intend to suffer the same fate. There were places he could go to seek refuge. The ossified hills, even the septic isles, but none were certain to be there when he arrived. Parts of the garden were ever shifting and changing, according to the whims of its master, and if Grandfather had decided his fate, there'd be no escaping it. No, he'd never run from a fight before, and didn't intend to start now. He'd stay the course and prove himself Grandfather's most favored son. Screams danced on the plague wind. The slave galleys of the Eternal Swamps had never been a match for the invaders. Their captains were lazy, their crews fat with easy meat. The demons aboard those ships were unfit even for service in Grandfather's blighted legions. It was no surprise that they'd been defeated so quickly. For too long, they'd pillaged the waters of the first tier, hunting souls that couldn't fight back. But Spume was made of sterner stuff than that. Perhaps this was the way Grandfather intended for him to prove his worth. He'd ride out this storm, lead them on, and stand tall against the winds. And at the end, he'd claim the glory for himself. Perhaps he would even ascend to the Court of Ruin. They would name him Grand Admiral of the Plague Fleets. But if he intended to turn this to his advantage, he needed to know the secrets of the captive dangling in his hold. He raised his axe.
"Whip them harder, Derg. I would be gone from these waters as soon as possible."
Order given, he started towards the hold. It was time to let Urslaug know that she'd rejoined his crew, whatever her feelings on the matter. He smiled, pleased at the thought. It had been too long since he'd sailed without a witch at his side.
"We are moving,"
the witch said, peering up.
"What has that fool done now?"
The balefire lanterns twisted on their hooks, casting weird shadows across the hull.
"Maybe you'd best go and see," Grim said.
He could hear the crack of thunder, and for an instant wondered again if someone, perhaps Sigmar himself, had come for him. As he had earlier, he dismissed the thought with a savage twitch of his head. No one was coming. Not even Gardas would be so foolish. Doubtless, some sorcery was at work. The servants of Chaos warred with each other as often as they did anyone else, and Spume seemed like the sort to have plenty of enemies, even here. Erslaug twitched an admonishing finger.
Shame! Do you think me so foolish as that, just because moss grows on my skull?
Grim didn't bother to reply. She leaned close.
Oh, perhaps it's not you, eh?
She held up a giggling nurgling.
What do you say, my pretty? Which soul so insults me?
The little demon chortled and bounced on her palms.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Another insult,
she said, tossing the nurgling over her shoulder. It struck a beam and slid to the floor with a wet plop.
I know the stink of the Order of the Fly when I smell it. Their chivalry is like a canker, infecting all it touches. Honor. Ha! What is honor, save the hope of order?
Insulting witch! Would that I had a blade and a hand to wield it with.
And if you had, what then, pox knight? Remove my head.
Grim jerked and looked up in shock. She cackled and tugged on an ear.
Yes, I hear him, and I suppose you would kill me if you could, pox knight. You lot are worse at taking criticism than even fat-bellied Spume. His arrogance at least is tolerable in its simplicity. Yours is unearned, save in your own delusions.
The witch spat into her cauldron.
You speak harshly of your ally, Grim said. Or is he your master?
He's a fool and a braggart,
the witch said, peering up at Grim.
Brave, but no wiser than that kraken which shares his skin.
She thrust a finger up to its knuckle into her eye and withdrew the glistening digit with agonizing slowness. With it, she painted a strange sigil on the curve of the hull.
Else he would not have stopped here.
You intend treachery,
Grim said, testing his chains. He needed to keep the creature talking, keep her from beginning whatever sorcery she intended.
That is to be expected.
And what would you know of it?
She snapped.
I know that you are a broken thing, without hope or beauty in you.
Erslaug stared at him, her eye expanding and contracting like a beating heart.
Then you know nothing at all,
she said, after a moment.
Like Spume, you are ignorant and deserve whatever fate befalls you.
She pressed her sticky fingers to his chest. He flinched back, and she laughed.
Scared? Good. No reason to be, though. I have no intention of doing as he wishes. No soul carving for you this day.
She smiled, displaying brown teeth.
No. Others will be interested in you as well, I'd wager. Once more willing to cross my palm with something of real value. Ah.
Grim saw that the mark she'd made on the hull was glowing.
Why do you summon me, witch?
The voice shivered dully through the planks of the hull, causing Grim to shudder in his chains.
Not just you, Gulax, she said. Wait but a moment, and all will be revealed.
Swiftly, she drew a second sigil with a dripping finger, this one on the deck. Greenish vapor rose from it, twisting into the long, lean shape of a verminous, horned skull.
Speak, speak, hag. I have no time to waste, spend in idle talk. If you didn't, you wouldn't have answered my summoning, Ransig,
Erslaug said, sinking inelegantly to her haunches.
I have something here that the both of you might be interested in. Something I am willing to barter, should you be of a mind.
I am Filthblade of the Rotguard, witch. I do not barter, Gulax rumbled.
No? Then you may leave.
The witch spoke confidently, but Grimm could see the tension in her withered form. She turned her pulsing eye on the smoking sigil on the floor.
What about you, bleak one? Or have the children of the Great Corruptor also lost their taste for honest trade? I am listening, heeding. Yes, yes. Speak, talk, quick, fast. I have a soul for you. A soul heavy with the stuff of the storm. You know of that which I speak.
She sat back on her heels.
Yes.
Both voices murmured in unison.
I offer it up to one of you in return for
death.
Urslaug shot to her feet with a squawk. She whirled, hands full of balefire, but not swiftly enough. Spume's axe swept out and thudded home in a support beam. Urslaug's head tumbled into her own cauldron as her body slumped to the deck. Spume kicked her body and shook his head in disgust.
This is the thanks I get for offering you a share of the plunder.
I know that voice, Gulax growled. Thief, corsair, liar, reaver.
Spume chopped into the sigil, obliterating it and silencing the basso voice. He whirled, ready to do the same to the second sigil, but it had already faded to a smudge of ash on the deck. He cursed.
I should have known. Never trust a woman or a witch, Shiny Skin.
Grimm laughed.
It seems you are to be undone by your own kind, beast.
Spume lifted Grimm's chin with the edge of his axe.
Competition is a fact of life, in the garden or otherwise, and I welcome the chance to prove my superiority.
Let me loose, and I'll prove which of us is superior,
Grimm said, with a cough. Something wriggled from between his lips and plopped to the deck. Spume trod on the maggot. He chuckled.
And who said that, then? Ye or the worm that gnaws?
Either will serve, Grimm said, for neither of us care much for you.
Spume threw back his head and gave a hoarse laugh.
Good! I've friends aplenty and need no more of them, but good enemies are in short supply.
He kicked over Urslaug's cauldron, spilling the bubbling brew everywhere. Nurglings fled in every direction, warbling in dismay. The souls in the hold screamed in agony as the liquid spilled through the bars of the cage. The Rotbringer scooped up a tentacle full of the hissing stew and slapped it across Grimm's chestplate. The tentacle writhed, smearing the concoction. Grimm could feel the heat of it through his armor.
It might please you to know that you're not the only one of your sort in the garden, Spume said. Someone is out there, tearing apart ships. Ye must be friendlier than ye seem, if they'd come all this way to get ye.
Grimm felt a spark of hope, then a rush of anger. What fool had come for him? There were easier ways to die, if they wished. Spume wrapped a tendril around his helmet and forced his head up.
I know why Father Decay is interested in you, and why I've been commanded to drag your carcass to desolation. It's not just you the Court of Ruination is interested in.
Grimm didn't know what Spume was ranting about, but he understood the implications well enough. He sagged in his chains, and Spume chortled.
Aye, ye see it now, don't ye? The deeper ye're taken into the garden, the deeper they'll have to come to get ye. Why settle for one drink when ye can have a cask, eh?
He stepped back.
It's no wonder Father Decay wants ye, the fat lubber. To offer up such a prize to grandfather is a worthy dream indeed.
And one you will not willingly share, I'd warrant,
Bubonicus murmured. Spume twitched and chuckled.
No need to worry, though. I'll offer you up to Nurgle myself, even if I must chop a path to his manse and drag this ship with my teeth.
He slammed Grimm's head back against the hull.
You're very welcome, I'm sure.
Grimm watched the chuckling creature climb back above decks, dearly wishing he was free. Just one hand, even. Clink. He looked. The bilious stew was sizzling against the chains. Several links had been eaten clean through. He tested them and found a little give. Not much, but maybe enough.
And where will you go then, Lorus?
Anywhere is better than here, Grimm muttered.
I do agree, but now is not the ideal moment.
A dull pain flared through him, and he tensed, gritting his teeth.
You're just trying to buy yourself time, monster.
Yes, but my time is your time. I would no more have you die to that brute's axe than I would have you offered up by some wretched princeling looking to curry favor. I have set my standard in the soil of your soul, and I shall defend what I have taken.
Grimm laughed, painful as it was to do so.
The enemy of my enemy is still my enemy. You all serve the same darkness, whatever you call it.
Oh, I, and your god-king is a singular being, is he?
Grimm fell silent. Sigmar had many names, it was true, and with each name, a face. All of these were equally true, facets of a greater whole.
And so it is with us. The king of all flies is vast and contains multitudes. Only once you accept your fate will you see his more beneficent side, Lorus.
Do not speak my name, Grimm said.
And why not? We are boon companions now. Your fight is my fight, and my fight yours. Once you accept this, we can...
Be silent, damn you!
Grimm thundered. His voice echoed through the hold, silencing even the whimpers of the trapped souls below.
Be silent,
he said again, more softly. Bubonicus said nothing. Grimm sagged in his chains and tried to ignore the feeling of worms gnawing at his innards.
Only the faithful, he said.
It was less a prayer than a plea.